Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome. I'm so happy to see you here, wherever you are, if you're driving on the road, if you are listening in your office, if you are at home, or wherever you are, welcome, welcome. We're so glad to have you in the home where we prescribe hope for healthy families. Hey, are you in on our 52 habits yet? Have you joined my New Year's resolution that's become our New Year's resolution, just a one-year journey to develop 52 habits for healthy parenting. We have been debuting a new habit every week, and I have heard from so many of you all over the country who are saying, yeah, count me in. I want to be in this. And all you have to do is just listen in or follow along on social media. You can find me on Instagram or Facebook at Dr. Nurse Mama. That's my professor brain, my hands-on nursing experience, and my heart as a mom to be a guide on the side for parents. We have talked about praying, memorizing scripture, plugging into a local church, listening to more Christian music, practicing intentional gratitude, and this week we are working on listening with our faces. I'll be talking more about that on the Friday show for the Ask Dr. Nurse Mama, which is what I do every Friday. I answer listener questions, but for today, I'm going to give you a teaser. Do you listen to your kids with your face, or do you listen with your face in a phone? Listen, the way that God designed us is for us as parents, when we make eye contact with our kids for at least 20 seconds, it releases oxytocin in their brain and makes them feel bonded to us. It's a built-in advantage that we can use to build connections with our kids. So I'll be talking more about that on Friday. Today, we have a show for new moms. Now, you may be thinking, I am not a new mom. I am not anywhere close to that. I'm not a mom yet, or I was a new mom a long time ago, or I'm a dad or a grandpa. It is for you, because even if you're not a new mom, you know a new mom, or you will know a new mom. And we want to work as a community to come alongside new moms and to encourage them. My guest today is Rachel Elmore. Now, after becoming a mom in 2012, Rachel fought to overcome postpartum depression in her own life. And when she got better, she dedicated her life and her career as a counselor, focusing on giving new moms the help that just wasn't there for her. Now, you already know, if you're a regular listener of this show, where Rachel and I have similar hearts, because I had this heart for becoming a new mom of teenagers. And Rachel, I wish that I had had this book, your book, when I was becoming a brand new mom. Now, Rachel is one of only three winners of Lisa Turker's Boot Proposal Boot Camp. And Rachel has partnered with HarperCollins Publishing to bring her new book, A Mom Is Born to Life. So Rachel, again, has written the book that she needed during her own struggle with postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. Rachel's a licensed clinical mental health counselor supervisor in North Carolina. She has 19 years of experience in the counseling field, and she is also a national certified counselor by the National Board of Certified Counselors. Rachel, welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I am thrilled to be here. This is such an honor and, again, such a thrill.
We're going to have a great conversation. So, listeners, buckle in. Here we go. When you have a baby, Rachel, I think especially your first, it felt for me, and I know for all other mamas out there, when you're expecting, you are the center of attention. I mean, everybody cares about your every breath, your every sip, your every bite, your every everything. And then all of a sudden, when you have that baby, you go from being the center of attention and handled with care to being completely invisible. And you described this experience in your book, and I was laugh kind of crying a little bit as I read the text messages that you got lying there on the operating room table after having had a C-section. Take us to that moment, Rachel.
Absolutely. So it just, you know, when I was praying about how to start this book, God was, it was so funny. I had lost contact with my iCloud. You know, the cloud is such a benefit these days, you know, obviously not always, but for this book, because out of nowhere, I had text messages from a decade ago populate. And I was sitting there writing a chapter of my book, and all of these text messages popped up, and it brought me back to that moment, Jessica, of being on the operating table and realizing it took 17 different people to text me before anybody asked me, how are you, Rachel? And they were, you know, questions like, what is his name? How big is he? Does he look like Dad? I mean, obviously, I could go through all 17, but it took 17 text chains to get to, how are you, Mama? And that just, I mean, yes, I read them now and absolutely can laugh. But then it made me realize the next time I saw a new mom, I didn't want her to be number 17 anymore. I didn't want her to be number 10 anymore. I wanted at least her to be question number two or three on my book. And so with that being said, that was very much my journey on that cold operating table and never wanting Mama to feel like number 17.
It's so true. And it's not that we don't love our babies and we don't want our babies to be the center of attention and, you know, the whole world, but it is an abrupt transition that nobody really prepares you for. Nobody is talking about that. And I remember, you know, my oldest is 20, but I can remember that exact thing. And you know, of course, my first daughter was the first in a new generation on both sides. So we were inundated with visitors and nobody wanted to see me. Frankly, I looked terrible. I felt even worse, you know, and you feel like, oh, I'm having to entertain and have visitors when I am like physically at the worst place I've been in my life. I'm exhausted. I've been in labor. Like I'm trying to learn all these things. I have all these emotions. But today, Rachel, I want you to help us frame the beginning of this journey, that moment that you and I have both described from our personal experience. And you frame this in your book by asking mamas to do three things. You ask them to speak, to believe, and to learn. And I want you to use those prompts to help frame the discussion that we're going to have here today for the rest of the afternoon.
Absolutely. So, you know, I know that the moment after we, or the moments after we have a baby, we're so overwhelmed, right? And I wanted to start this book and keep it really simple and say, hey, mamas, I know that you probably haven't washed your hair today, or you might be about ready to go into the hospital to give birth. You're overwhelmed. So let me start with these three things. And so when I talk about speak, I want moms to know that they're going to need to involve the community. They're going to need to talk to people at their church. They're going to need to bring people into their lives. And, you know, I wrote this kind of peak pandemic, which was quite a challenge to be able to say, hey, you're going to have to go ahead and reach out and get your mind in a framework of saying, hey, you're going to have to let people know that you might need some help here and there, even if you don't have postpartum depression or anxiety. And then, so, you know, we have our speak, we have our believe, and the believe, obviously, the faith aspect is everything here. I don't believe in faking it till you make it. I believe you faith it until you make it. Mm. And so with believing, I also challenge my readers to believe that the treatment plan in this book that I've used for 10 years on thousands of women, it might just work for them too. If it's worked for me, and I was the first guinea pig for this treatment plan, that I know that this plan that God has given me, I would love to take all the credit. I can't, because it was the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ who gave me this message to be able to say, this might work. So to believe that maybe God does have something for you through just even scripture and through all of the hope that is in his word. And then the third step that we bring up here, Jessica, is to learn. And I really do believe my book is full of what we call responsible grace. And that absolutely, like, God has so much grace for us, especially in motherhood. But that there are some things that we might need to learn and work on as human beings, as beautiful women, as motherhood is such a holy calling. It really is, in, I believe, very sacred and holy calling to be called to bring up these children to be believers in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So that's how I start my book, is to say, here's these three little steps, and here's what I would like to say to make them really, really simple today.
Amen, Rachel. And I love that. Faith it until you make it. That's game changing for me. I'm stealing that. I'm just going to make that very clear right now. Well, we know, both of us, you know, in clinical professions, we know the statistics that there are about 15% of moms who struggle with postpartum depression. That's symptoms that rise to a level that's diagnosable. But almost all moms have the baby blues. And Rachel, I just want to share with you, you know, my own story. I was a very insecure mom when I first had my baby. And I had a very strained relationship at that time with my mom. And so it was just, that made the dynamic harder. And at the time, I was a new pediatric nurse practitioner. So here I am, you know, thinking that I've been professionally prepared to teach people how to take care of their babies. Like, that is my life mission. And at home, I was just a total failure. My baby had awful colic, so she cried all the time. She was not good at feeding, and that, I'm sure, is a lot of my anxiety. You know, she was feeling all of that, and she cried all the time. And when she was about 8 weeks old, I finally had the courage to basically leave the house. And we went to a baby shower, and one of my relatives, who was really well-meaning, she asked me, she brought my baby back to me and said, "She's crying. Why is she crying?" And that question was so devastating to me, because I just said, "I don't know. I don't know why she's crying." And that relative said, "Well, you're her mom. That's your job. You're supposed to figure it out." And it was not safe, I'm sure, for me to drive home, because I was boohooing. It was so awful. And then you feel all these guilt, like, why does something that's such an incredible blessing? I mean, I have a lot of friends who were struggling with infertility, and here I have a baby, and I feel so shamed because it is a burden. And you share this in your book, Rachel. You say that you had this experience, and you realized the tears you saw on your baby's head were yours. How does this blessing feel like a burden? This is just the truth. That's a hard truth to say out loud.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, your story. My heart like leapt when you said that, because I was like, oh, I felt that so much too. I had, when people would look at me, you know, my son had a dairy allergy, Jessica, that we didn't know about for months. And that was very, very painful. He cried all the time. And so when people would say, "Why is he crying?" I don't think anyone ever said those words to me. "Well, it's your job." I mean, my heart just like broke into a million pieces when you said that. Because I was like, oh, as a mother, it just aches to have something like that happen. And I never want a mom to feel like that, because also, like, spoiler alert, our job is to keep trying and to keep swimming. It's not to, like, we're not mind readers. We're not God. And our God is the one that reveals those kinds of things. And so with that, getting back to your original question of why is this amazing baby feel like a shameful and feel like a burden? And the tears on my baby's head were mine. And that was so painful and shameful for me. And I like to point out that the difference between guilt and shame is guilt is having feelings, negative feelings about things we do, and shame is having negative, hurtful feelings about who we are. And so shame has no place here, because we are daughters of a king, first of all. Let me just go ahead and paint everything hot pink with that, if I could, and say we are daughters of a king. And so to be able to say that, yes, it's this unreal pressure, especially, I was already a licensed therapist, girl. I thought I knew what I was doing here. And I went into it thought, I mean, I knew it would be hard. I had no idea the shame and the pain. And so the biggest thing that started to help me with the shame is once I was able to identify it and be able to say, okay, wait a minute. If we are created in God's image, then we do have what it takes to be great mothers. And we absolutely always have things in each stage of motherhood that we need to work on, right? But the shame has no place. The shame was tearing me apart. And that the world and the pressure and Instagram and at the time Pinterest and all of the perfect houses and all of this comparison was tearing me down, and the enemy was going crazy with it. He was having way too much fun tearing me apart.
But that was not the end of the story. That was not the end of the story. So Hold that thought, Rachel. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how you dad up. How do we as moms let dads be dads? And how do dads be the best dads or grandpas or village that you can have? You're not going to want to miss it. We'll be right back.
Sometimes you see a win, a glimpse of God in this broken world. Preborn rejoices in the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Preborn's mission is to love and help women in unplanned pregnancies by offering them the truth to help them make the right choice by providing free ultrasounds. You see, when an expectant mom hears her baby's heartbeat and sees the image of her baby on ultrasound, she's seeing a life created in God's image, and it's a divine connection.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
To learn more about Preborn's life-saving work, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com, or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life. You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Hey friends, welcome back. We are talking to Rachel Elmore. Rachel is a counselor and she has experienced postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. She is the author of A Mom is Born. Now, I read in one of her endorsements, somebody said that this book should be in the diaper bag of every mom going home from the hospital. And I agree. So if you are going to a baby shower anytime soon, pick up a copy of this book, A Mom is Born, and add it to your gift bag. I'm telling you, I wish I had had this book when I had my babies 20 years ago. It would have been a game changer for me. And we are actually going to give a copy of this book away, courtesy of Rachel, to the first caller at 888-589-8840. So go ahead and call in and we will give you a copy of this book. Now, before the break, we were talking about both of our experiences. Here we are. I feel like there's a joke in there somewhere, Rachel, like a counselor and a pediatric nurse practitioner walk into a delivery room and dramedy ensues, right? Like we both struggled very much. Now, I want to start with some basic definitions. Let's go back to the beginning. Talk about what is the difference between postpartum depression and baby blues. And we've got extremes on both sides, baby blues and postpartum psychosis. Let's just give a little disclaimer to anybody who might be listening when they may need to seek help.
Absolutely. And I always begin as a mental health professional. I always want anyone to know, if you are, and I don't want to be triggering, but if you are having thoughts of self-harm or harming someone else across the board, your next stop is not to finish the show. It's to go ahead and reach out to a healthcare provider. And so, you know, I always want everyone to know that. I don't want to be super triggering, but I want people to know that obviously we take that very seriously as healthcare professionals. But so we know that postpartum depression and anxiety is pretty common, you know, between 15 and 20%. And we know that most all new moms, including adoptive moms, experience some baby blues. And so with that, we've got symptoms like crying a lot, feelings of hopelessness, feeling like you're on a roller coaster of emotions, having things like intrusive thoughts, which I have an entire chapter of my book with how to deal with those, which are unwanted thoughts that just seem to plague the mind, and just feeling sad and anxious, having trouble sleeping, changes in appetite. The big difference, I really try to make it super simple, between postpartum depression and or anxiety and baby blues is severity and how long the symptoms last. Anything that lasts longer than 2 to 3 weeks, where you're crying more than an hour straight a day and you're feeling horrible and you might be afraid to pick up your baby, anything that's lasting longer than 2 to 3 weeks, we are looking at something that's more of an actual diagnosis at that point. If the baby blues goes away typically in just those first couple of weeks. So I try to make it really simple when it comes to delineating between a diagnosis and baby blues.
And you know, that can be really important for support people. So we're not just talking to moms here, Rachel. We're talking to those support people who are around them who might see this. This is going on for three, 4 weeks now. You're not able to get out of bed. You're not doing your normal activities. You're not finding enjoyment in your baby. It is okay to gently and lovingly suggest that they talk to their healthcare provider to see what can be done, because a lot of times what can be done is just some additional support. One of the things that you say in your book, Rachel, which I just loved, was hold my baby and bring me snacks. This is, and you actually had a video on your Instagram recently that was so funny, but kind of not funny because it was so real about what you should say and what you shouldn't say and what you should bring and what you shouldn't bring. And I'll just share with you, for me, I really look back and I do think that I had unrecognized postpartum depression. I never would have admitted that in a million years. But I think the thing that saved me was actually my mother-in-law. We were not very close before I had my daughter. They had lived in a different city. But during that time, she came in and she really didn't say a word. She didn't critique me. She washed my clothes. She held my hair back when I was sick. She clipped coupons for me. This was before smartphones. So she would get out the scissors and clip out coupons. So I knew that she even knew what kind of detergent that I liked. You know, just those little things to convey care. And there were so many times my baby was crying. I could not move at all. I would just sit so still on the couch with her. And she would just come and put a glass of water and a snack beside me, not say a word. And those things made all the difference. So talk about that, Rachel. Tell us how support persons, whether you're a friend, you're a mother-in-law, you're a grandfather, whoever, how should they respond to new moms?
I think showing up with food is always a good place to start. And having very little expectation of that new mom that, you know, she doesn't need to look nice. She doesn't need to go get you something to drink. You need to come in and be willing, deep breath, things might be a little uncomfortable to kind of come and say, hey, I'm going to just drop off food on your front porch. I promise I won't make the dog bark. I won't ring the doorbell. I'll text you. You can say hi or you cannot. And so I think as Christians, I mean, it's an oversimplification. I've never been annoyed with a friend showing up at my house with food. I've never been like, oh man, I wish she hadn't baked me sourdough bread. I'm always like so blessed, right? That somebody loves me enough to make it a little uncomfortable and to say, I'm going to stop by with food. And I think we need to assume in our culture, a lot of cultures just expect that new moms need to be checked in on. I think for us to assume that new moms in this, especially first 6 weeks, that they need a little bit of extra help. And that's not a bad thing to send a text message and say, hey, I just sent you a DoorDash to your house, or, you know, just kind of being a little bit, taking that extra step, because she's probably too tired to tell you what she needs. I know in the beginning, because like you, we had a similar newborn experience, it sounds like, Jessica. Mm-hmm. It's the first time in my life I forgot to eat. Like, I would forget to eat. It's bizarre. I've never had that problem since. And my stomach, like growling, just didn't signal my brain that I needed to do anything. And I remember my mom, she was working at the time. She doesn't live locally, so she could only come and be with me for a short period of time. But her doing the same thing. And just when I was using my breast pump, or when I was trying in between feedings, her coming and sitting a snack beside me. And again, just telling a mom what she's doing right. Because we are sitting there feeling like we've gotten it all wrong. We were thinking, this isn't the right way to burp a baby. Maybe I burped her wrong. She just spat up all this expensive formula. Or maybe I'm supposed to hold the breast pump like this. Maybe I need this kind of swing. And I think that it helped. I had women from my church that stopped by that I didn't even know. They were from my pastor who sent them, who said, that's exactly how I calmed all of my children. You're doing a great job. You're doing just like that, Rachel. Fantastic. Like, that was so, if I could describe the millions of dollars that felt like to my broken soul in those moments, of saying, you're doing a good job, and let me be specific why. So maybe it's hold my baby and bring me snacks, of just showing up, like being ready for, you know, she might have dry tears all over her face, and being willing to step in the discomfort and be a little uncomfortable, bring her food and tell her what she's doing right would be so powerful for really, I believe, any new mom.
Well, you also talk about a postpartum pack, that you need specific people in your pack. So who is your pack, Rachel? Who should people be surrounding themselves with intention? I think that's the important thing.
Yes, and I always like to point out, it's 3 to 5 people that commit for 3 to 6 months to check in on you, to be faithful, available, and teachable. It spells F-A-T. I know that's a bad word, but, you know, faithful, available, faithful, available, and merciful. Forgive me, it's spam. And so with that being said, we want to be able to say that these people come into your life. And for myself, it was my mom, who wasn't local, but she was still a huge support and always available in the middle of the night on the phone if I needed her, answered every text. My husband, I was very blessed to have and still have an amazing husband who was a huge part of my healing journey. And then also, I always like to point out, one member of my postpartum pack wasn't a mom. She wasn't a parent. She's not married and a mom, but at the time she was single and didn't have children. And she would come to my house. This was back in the day when we had DVDs, so we didn't stream everything. And she'd bring a frozen pizza and she would just hang out with me and just talk to me, and she would pray for me. And we would watch, you know, reruns of The Office or whatever it might be, and just laugh together. And while he would cry for most of the day, that's what got me through, were these visits from people. And I didn't even know some of these people as well. I love your story with your mother-in-law and the fact that you guys got closer through that time. And for people to know, it doesn't have to be your mother or it doesn't have to be family. I want to break out of that and say, hey, a couple of members of my pack weren't people that I knew that well. And now I know them super well, but God brought those people into my life. They were trusted people because I'd reached out to my pastor and said, look, Rachel needs, I need some help. I need some people to check in on me right now. And so I want people to know, it really, as we pray for our postpartum pack, you know, I've never seen God not come through. He does. Even peak pandemic, that was such a challenge, working with women and teaching them how to come up with their postpartum pack when we were, you know, we were all living such separate lives and separate situations.
I think this is, it's really important, Rachel, because there is so much fear because we don't think we're doing anything right as new moms. And so there's a tendency to kind of hibernate and to hide. And then that creates this relational tension. Like, why doesn't she want us to come over? Why doesn't she let us see the baby? You know, why does she seem like she wants us to leave? Mm-hmm. It's like, because she is afraid and insecure. Like, it's not about you. It's mm-hmm. about her. Mm-hmm. And that's so important to do. And I love that you talk about the dad. Because let me tell you, when I had my first baby, my husband, he doesn't have actually any first cousins, and he had never really been around babies. And so he was so eager, but so like, ill-equipped, didn't know. This was before YouTube. You can't even go and, you know, watch any influencers or anything. And I remember, you know, I was not very kind, Rachel. I'm just going to tell you that, because I thought, this is a place, a safe place for me where I can leverage my expertise and I can make myself feel better by saying, no, that's not how you bathe a baby. Let me show you how to do it. Because I felt like I was failing everything else, you know, and I did that. So our baby is crying. And I'm trying everything and it's not working. And he wants to try. Do you know what he did, Rachel? I finally said, okay, fine. You see if you can get her to stop crying. He starts marching with her. Now, my husband has never been in the military. He's a rocket scientist, which maybe, you know, I should have paid attention to because he's smart. But he starts marching with her in the kitchen, singing cadence. He's like, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Oh, yeah, I can't believe I just did that on the radio. But I did.
I love it.
You know, she stopped crying. And I didn't know whether to hug him or slug him. Like, you know, because I was so grateful that it worked, but I was also so angry that like it worked for him and it didn't work for me. But you talk about, how do we let, as moms, let the dads be dads?
Mm-hmm. It's so important. I know I had a moment like that as well, where we couldn't get my second son to calm down. And my husband walked in and like did a little massage right to the left of his belly button. And he got out the best little gas bubble out of my newborn. And I was so annoyed with him that he's like, yeah, I read about this and wanted to try it. And I was so annoyed that one Google search for him solved a problem that I'd been dealing with like for hours at that time.
Yep.
And, but you know, dads have really good instincts too. It's his baby too. And You know, the best thing in the world, I believe, is for a child, if it's possible and safe, and I was raised by a fiercely strong single mother, is for dad and mom to be really involved in the bonding with this baby. And how that happens is to let dads be dads. And dad's instincts when it comes to calming down babies can be incredible. And so we don't want to stop that. They're going to try a different tactic. They're going to try different ways to calm that baby. Unless they're about to drop your child, let him be a dad. Let him learn. Because we all have to make mistakes. We all have to burp them the wrong way where they throw up all the precious breast milk that you just pumped. Like, we have to get through it. That's how we learn. And being a parent is a truly extraordinary thing. It is a very terrifying thing. And just like moms are terrified, dads are too. And one of the worst mistakes I see moms do is say, you're doing it wrong. Let me just do it. You're doing it wrong. I'll just do it. What is that like for that dad who's really trying to be a dad and help? I just think about words like even, I know it's harsh, but like emasculating, just tearing him down. When if he's genuinely trying to learn to be a dad, let him learn and have patience. And girl, there's definitely been moments I wasn't super kind either. But to be able to say, let him be a dad, because that's how this is going to go the best. This is how this process is going to be the most successful. That's how it builds a bond. I talk about in my book, where you are going to have a daughter that someday you want to be bonded enough with her dad. She can go to him if she's thinking about dating a boy that she probably shouldn't date. Or maybe, I don't want to be triggering, but the first time that a boyfriend is a little abusive to her. And you want dad to be bonded with your baby, because that's how this process is going to work. And we know that dad and mom bonding with their child is directly related to the self-esteem of the child when they are grown. We want to let them be dads.
It's so true. And, you know, when my kids were little, I used to have something my kids started to call Mommy Fun Day. It would be where we go to the library or the zoo or the community pool. And my kids perceived it as, hey, we're doing something really fun. I perceived it as, I need you to be out of my house that I just cleaned and walking somewhere so that when we come home, you don't mess it up and you just take a nap and I still have a clean house. But my husband was like, I need to have something on my own. And so he came up, Rachel, with something he called Daddy Danger Day. Now, I'm not recommending this for the listeners out there, but he let them, you know, eat ice cream for breakfast and go outside with no shoes on and all the things I didn't let them do. And they loved both of them. And the quote in here that you have in your book, Rachel, is, do you want your husband or partner to be a dad who only pays the bills and poses with coordinated outfits for the family annual Christmas card? Or do you want him to be the warrior and father that God asks him to be? Because it starts today, right this very moment. I'm talking to you. If you're listening to me, it starts today, right this very moment. Now, when we come back, Rachel, we're going to talk specifically to single moms and talk about your experience being raised by one and give some encouragement for them. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Talking with Rachel Elmore. She is a counselor and the author of A Mom Is Born. We're talking to new moms, but we're also talking to anyone who's around a new mom, which is pretty much every single one of you. We have given away 3 copies of this book. Rachel is giving away 3 copies. So thank you, Rachel, for that. We congratulate Virginia from Arkansas, Rose from Texas. Yay, go Texas. I have to put in that, you know, as the Texas girl there. And Barbara from Ohio. How exciting is that? We have talked about how basically the struggles that new moms have. Rachel and I have shared both of our struggles. And even though both of us are professionals as a counselor, a nurse practitioner, that didn't make us immune to having struggles with our own babies. So to catch you up, we've talked about postpartum depression, what it is, what it isn't, who you should have in your postpartum pack, and how we can support new moms. The shortcut on that is bring food and DoorDash it, like just drop and go. Like that's the best thing to do. We've also talked about dads and the important role that they have in being dads in this experience. But right now, Rachel, I want to focus our attention on single moms. We know from statistics that there are a lot of single moms, and this is something that's really near and dear to my heart, having several family members who I've seen walk this journey of single motherhood. And you were raised by a single mom. So you lived that growing up after your parents' divorce and your father's exit from your life. And honestly, Rachel, I think single moms are truly, 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 I mean this, some of the bravest and the strongest people I know, but they mother in a way that is so uniquely challenging. I heard this phrase a long time ago that the longest days and the shortest years are when your kids are young. And I can remember those long days when I would be at home. I stayed at home when my kids were little. And I mean, I would watch the clock and wait until 5 o'clock. Like I could not wait until my husband walked in that door and I would say, all right, I'm tapping out. But single moms don't have that luxury. And I think it can be hard too, because you don't have that same sharing experience where you're saying, oh, let's watch these milestones together. And there's a lot of burdens that they have to bear. So how can you encourage single moms who don't have that paternal presence for their child?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to tell every single mom out there that, you know, I made it. And I just want to encourage that, you know, this child of a single mom went to grad school, wrote a book or two, you know, is happily married. And I just want to give them a little bit of hope. And as hard as it is to be a single mother and watching my mom be a single mom, and she really is just one of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life. She's an amazing mother. But with that being said, when you're a single mom, I feel like you have fewer choices when it comes to mothering. And let me be specific before you lose it and before you walk away and say, oh, no, Rachel's being like taking away my hope. No, we're not doing that. And let me explain. Single moms don't get to choose whether or not often they're going to volunteer to make the cupcakes for the preschool class, or whether or not, you know, she may have to bottle feed. She may not get to choose whether or not she goes back to work. She has to go back to work. And to be able to, I want to just free those moms today. I know that's not my job to do that, but if you have fewer choices because you're a single mom, that is the nature of the mothering situation that we are in. And I want to encourage, as a father steps out, which is never God's plan. It was not God's plan for my father to step out on my family and my brother, but he did. And when he stepped out, men from the church and family members and even neighbors stepped in. And I talk a lot about surrogate fathers. And look, it is not one of those things. I know there's some moms listening that are going to be like, no, there's no one in my life that's going to step in and be there. And they weren't all dads. There were other, my friends' moms and dads, and there were so many people in my life that poured into me when my dad stepped out of my life. So I just want to encourage, is I think the boundaries have to be even bigger with the single mom, because she may not have as many options in the beginning as a mom that's got, you know, a dual income or has the help at night and things like that. You're not going to have the option to say no to extra help. You might have to say yes to extra help. And with that, to be able to, if I could offer a little freedom with that, I'm just saying, you know, I'm going to have to say yes. I would challenge the single mothers to say yes to the help, to when church wants to drop off meals for 2 weeks. I'd challenge you to say yes, because I think that you need to, because you need to be focusing on yourself and on that baby.
I think that's so important. And I'll give a shout out to my father-in-law. I know he's listening. He's so supportive and is one of our show's biggest fans. So, hey, Dad, how are you? I'm going to give you a shout out, because my father-in-law, you know, was a very successful businessman. But when he retired, he was wondering, like, What is he going to do? And he joined a program at a local school. It was through our church to be a mentor for kids. And he has been a mentor for kids who have a single mom. And it, I don't know who has loved it more, the kids that he's mentored or him, because he's able to be there and be that parental presence. And so I know that he has gone to basketball games. And there was one time when he had a group of boys that he decided to take out to the Olive Garden. And he said, you guys need to learn how to have some manners. And we are going to get dressed up and we're going to go to the Olive Garden and I'm going to teach you how to order and how to have good manners. And he came home and I said, well, how did it go? And he said, no one ate spaghetti with their face. I feel like this is a win, which is what he said. But you know, that may be you out there listening. You may be like my father-in-law. You may be a grandparent with some time on their hands. And let me tell you, there are programs available in so many communities. And even if there's not a program, just offering to speak into that person's life, just saying, hey, we want to be surrogate grandparents and we want to come to your kids' things. That could be so powerful. And you actually, in your book, you asked other single moms to contribute to an advice list. So there's a pretty lengthy advice list of single moms giving advice to other single moms. Can you give us like two or three of the gems from that list?
Sure. This was a lot of fun because, again, it's just things need to be simpler, right? One of the best ones was, you know, establish a very simple meal plan. The easier, the better. Say yes when someone offers to help. Set up multiple diaper changing stations in the house. Like have like several of them around the house at all times. And when we think about, you've got to, you know, we're not going to buy pajamas with snaps. Like, I know that's one of the silliest things, but like, we're gonna do zippers. Like, we're just going to do zippers. You are going to accept the help when it's offered to you. And so those are a few. I know I have a huge list in the book.
You do.
So I didn't want to leave any of them out. Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that stood out to me the most was be okay with good enough. And, you know, that's actually something I tell my students a lot, because as moms, we don't want to be good enough. We want to be great. We want to be excellent. We want to be the very best. But we have to remember that in some days, all we can do is give our good enough. But if you think about what those two words mean, good enough is good enough. It is good enough for the moment. You know, having, you know, a peanut butter and jelly like for dinner, or having cereal, or having leftovers, that is good enough. Some days it's good enough just to keep everybody safe. You know, that can be good enough. And I want to read another quote from your book, Rachel, that I thought was so good. And you actually had quoted somebody else, but it said, how to be a mom in 2017. This was when the quote came out. It said, make sure your children's academic, emotional, psychological, mental, spiritual, physical, nutritional, and social needs are met while being careful not to overstimulate, understimulate, improperly medicate, helicopter, or neglect them in a screen-free, processed foods-free, GMO-free, negative energy-free, plastic-free, body-positive, socially conscious, egalitarian, but also authoritative, nurturing, but fostering of independence, gentle, but not overly permissive, pesticide-free, two-story, multilingual home, preferably in a cul-de-sac with a backyard, and 1.5 siblings spaced at least 2 years apart for proper development. Also, don't forget the coconut oil. And then it says, how to be a mom in literally every generation before ours. Feed them sometimes. I mean, and you said this really, I thought this really grabbed a hold of my heart, that bad moms don't worry about being bad moms. Only good moms do that. Share about that, about how we can take reassurance and comfort in our worries that we have about being bad moms.
Absolutely. And so part of my journey when you become a licensed therapist is I had to work for free for about 4 years. And it's kind of similar to maybe med school rotations. And so, and I always say this with a lot of humility, in that I grew up in a lot of poverty, and this has nothing to do with poverty, but I had to do social work and well checks and things like that with moms in very rough parts of town, and moms that I would say are bad moms. And look, I've not done everything right. I've made a lot of mistakes in motherhood. But moms that sent their kids to school dirty and didn't feed them, moms that didn't rock them to bed at night when they were scared, moms that didn't make sure to save money for a little treat on their child's birthday. I have worked with moms that knowingly did hard drugs, pregnant, and things of that sort. And I'm never being judgy of moms. But the thing that really stuck with me in those early years of me being an intern is that those bad moms did not worry at all about the fact that they might need to work on some of their behavior. They slept. I mean, their sleeping was incredible. They slept great at night. It was the good moms. We're the ones lying awake at night like, oh, is my child, should I switch schools or should I hire a tutor or, oh, I shouldn't have disciplined at this time. You know, bad moms don't do that. That's only the good ones. The fact that you're listening to this podcast probably means you're on the path to being a pretty good mom. And that really did set me free in so many ways as a mother.
And that just opens up such a door for what you talk about a lot in the last half of your book that we haven't even got to, and that is childhood trauma. And a lot of those moms who don't know how to be moms and have experienced so much trauma, they cannot even realize, they don't have the emotional or the psychological capacity to realize that they're harming their kids. And that is across all spectrums in every socio-demographic, in every neighborhood, everywhere. We have an epidemic, I think, Rachel, of childhood trauma, that's how we see that manifest. But the fact that if you're thinking about it, thinking, do I need to work on this, or that you're worrying about your child's emotional welfare, that says that you have enough emotional and relational capacity, that you at least have that awareness to be worrying about that. And I think that this is something that is often really overlooked and underappreciated, Rachel, because as moms, we think kind of how that quote that you had in your book from someone else that talks about we have to do all of those things to be good moms. But that is not the truth. What we know from research is that the number one predictor of kids growing up resilient and experiencing hardship, which we all will, because we know that in this world we will have trouble, but we can take heart because God has overcome the world, is meaningful connection to an adult who's invested. And most of the time that is going to be the mom. Although there's certainly the more adults, the merrier, that dads and other adults who are connected to kids. And what I always explain, Rachel, is that when kids experience stress and trauma, it turns on this faucet of chemicals in their brain. And I'm sure you know this even better than I do. And it can bathe their brains in a toxic bath of chemicals. And what we do when we sit beside them, when we give them a hug, when we pick up that crying baby, when we rock them, when we sing to them, when we massage the left side of their tummy in a magical daddy sort of way, you know, to get rid of the gas bubble from the tutorial, all of those things, it turns off that faucet of toxic stress chemicals in their brain. That is powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what we can do as parents. That's the power. We don't have to fix every stressor they have. You know, if you're a single mom, you don't have to find a dad for it to be okay. You being there matters. Every I love you matters. Every gesture of kindness and care that you make matters. And that is the power that we have as moms. And that's how a mom is born. Well, Rachel, this has been such an encouraging conversation. Where can we find you and connect with your community?
Absolutely. So I'm at rachelelmore.com, and it's RACHAEL. I'm at Rachel Hunt Elmore on Instagram as well as on Facebook. I also have a tiny TikTok account, but I'm not on there a ton. But it's really easy to connect with me with any of those areas. You can also find my book on Amazon. It's actually 35% off today, which is really cool.
Ooh,
and my
excellent.
Book is available anywhere books are sold, which is really fun. And I also read the audiobook, which is a big honor as well.
Absolutely. So from Rachel's book, 4 Decisions Today, friends. Make a decision to ask for support from your postpartum pack. Don't apologize to anybody for needing support. wait expectantly for your friends to become family, and you should believe that when things seem impossible, God has a plan to make beauty out of ashes. And from Isaiah 49, mm-hmm. But the Lord says, for I will fight those who fight you, and I will save your children. Have a good day, friends. We'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.